Very good. So I will do a very quick presentation of my dear friend Vivaldi and Andrea Sua. I think in order to present them, I have to do a very quick trip. And the trip starts from Buckminster Fuller, goes to Vernadsky, goes to Jan Allen, and then goes to us. So it will be a quick, very intense, supersonic trip. But that is important for you to follow. First thing, I will start with Bucky. And I will read in my bad English, or better, probably, 3D will read for me, what is the Bucky key algorithm. Because that is very important and will give life in everything we've done and whatever you are going to see with you. So please, read this.
Hi, I'm Preeti. This algorithm of creative design participation in human evolution consists of 5 steps. If there is a large-scale design problem, then take the synergetic overall approach. If you take the synergetic overall approach, then proceed to a comprehensive anticipatory design. If you've started on this, then make detailed macro comprehensive and micro incisive studies. If these are completed, then proceed to do more with less. Ephemeralize. If you've ephemeralized, then computerize to check rationality and to communicate. And if you've computerized, then check if you've increased the wealth of all involved. This algorithm constitutes his greatest contribution to dealing with the challenges coming towards humanity in the next century, a time of great planetary troubles, which he metaphorically referred to as humanity's final examination.
Okay. For the sake of the student, I have also my own algorithm, and then I'll decide when to talk about it. But Bucky is a key aspect of the triangle that I'm going to build. The other aspect of the triangle is Vernadsky. We cannot think about all of us without Vernadsky, because Vernadsky is a geologist, but at the same time is a cosmologist, and is an ecological thinker coming from Russia, and with a whole, much more holistic thinking about the powers, the lines, and the concepts relating to our world. And it's very important that the Russia thinks about cosmology, and they call cosmo what the Americans call space. And it's very different, the concept. So why John Allen comes within these forces, and why is the propellant of this incredible mixture? Because John is at the same time a poet, John Dolphin is his name, is a geologist, of course, himself as a formation, and at the same time it is a scientist, and is also, never forget that, an entrepreneurial. He's a person that has a business degree from Harvard. So all these things together brings the fact we are facing a really humanistic person of the 20th century, a kind of new Leonardo in a way, being able to deal in different aspects of society, going from art to science. So he started in the 60s to understand how to put together Bucky, Vernadsky, and its own strength. And it creates this triangle that is propellant of so many important things, and that's why we are here. He started to build and to really create systematic ecological projects. That means he started, the first one was called Synergia Ranch, in order to be an homage to Bucky, but at the same time really embodied the concept. And then after that, they built a ship that's still running. Actually, we're almost finishing, aren't we? But it's still running around the globe in order to collect first-hand information about culture, ecology, etc. Now, their most well-known project is in my opinion, the most single important science experiment that has been done in the area of ecology in the last 30 years. We are talking about Biosphere 2, that is a closed environment built in Tucson, Arizona, in order to really study and develop new systems in order to understand how to deal really with ecology issues in a kind of a new way. And this was done in the 90s. The project was so important, so revolutionary, that in a certain moment was such a threat to the official system that it was closed and destroyed by force. This story is never completely known. It's starting to be known now. It's one of the tragedy, or one of the way that the roots of a country goes from one direction to the other. So only at this point we arrive in the scene. I met John Allen in an astronaut conference. I was so excited to be in an astronaut conference. I will not debate about that. But anyway, Johnny was there, and we immediately, almost immediately, felt some type of magnetic forces among us. And I started a process of going closer and closer to him. I exchanged paper. I was invited to the annual conference that they do, in which Bucky was a hero in the 80s, of course. And so, during this process, I learned and getting more and more closer and closer, and become more friend and more friend with the different directors of different projects around the world. The institution is a non-profit institution called Institute of Ecotechnics. The Institute of Ecotechnics is a non-profit organization that runs different projects around the world, each one very site-specific, but at the same time, each one similar in the basic principles. So one of these projects is a gallery in London that deals with 3D transcend avant-garde coming from Africa, Asia, and other parts. Another project is an ecosystematic firm in France. Another project is exactly Casas La Selva that Andres and 3D run since 2 decades, right? So my friends, my Italian friends, when they saw us hugging each other, they cannot believe how that warm hug was, because for us it was a big luck to find us here in Puerto Rico, because we meet every year, but we meet in all different parts of the... So for me it was very exciting. And I have really to thank you so much, Marta Cohen and Nancy Clark, to host and accept my suggestion, and to have you here. I'm sure that they will give you a fantastic presentation, because they are living this project that they will talk what it is, but at the same time they are living very harshly the crisis that is in Puerto Rico. So please applaud them.
So my name is Preeti Bakio. Thank you everybody who managed to get myself and Andres here. I've been working with the Las Casas de la Selva Sustainable Forestry Project now since I arrived on the island in 1999. So the interesting thing is, it was just after Hurricane George. I didn't live through Hurricane George, I wasn't here. And I see now, watching all of this about hurricane, etc., that if you haven't lived through it, you're likely to make the same mistakes as everybody else did before you. So it's good to come and learn from people who have been there before. So now here I am on the other side of a major hurricane, and the project has been smashed. We're at the same elevation at El Yunque, 600 meters, and of course at El Yunque a bit more, but we're at the top of the mountain near the Carite Forest, and it's an apocalyptic scene up there. So for the last 40 years, that project has been growing trees. There was in the late 80s and early 90s, the tree planting, 40,000 valuable hardwood trees were planted on land. It's 1,000 acres of land, of which 300 acres is tree, they actually started harvesting some of the mahō trees, like the cicilatus, which was planted in quantity there. After that was about 15 years down the line of planting, they were ready to be thinned and harvested. And we're really doing a very selective harvesting. It's really just in myself and Andres learning how to do something by doing it. And that is going back to the project that Nino just brought up. All of the projects the Institute of Ecotechnics operates are places where people can volunteer, go live and learn in a biome. So we have the rainforest biome and we live there and we have learned so much. I've been there now 18 years and I feel like I'm bursting with information. It's a good thing a lot of the information has also gone into Excel data sheets, etc., etc. I don't know what I would do otherwise. We are selling wood. And we have done many collaborative projects with UNR, we've got a wastewater garden, we've got composting toilets, we're fixing up the infrastructure, and this future time now holds looking at, of course, hurricane-proof structures, which, you know, everybody after hurricanes, especially if there's not a lot of money involved, carries on building the same stuff. And again, without the experience of the previous hurricane, I would say people to say, oh yeah, let's just put that up, let's go for it, you know, we're lucky we haven't had a hurricane, and we can cry and be traumatized, which we are because our home has been destroyed, but this is a huge lesson to learn how to build resilient structures and to build places where people can live comfortably through a hurricane. Everybody loves to watch something. And I think for me, my next stage is to build something on that land where people can come and watch a hurricane and live comfortably in the aftermath of the hurricane. So we've been working with also with Fish and Wildlife, planting critically endangered tree species on the land, etc., etc. These are all things now to go out and survey. How did those trees do? How did our plantation trees do? We've planted Suetinia, mahogany trees, we've got the mahō, we've got a whole host of trees in the forest that we don't know how they survive, and that's a whole other research project now that takes the next era of our research work. I'm going to turn you on to Andres now because we've both been working in the wood business, and then we went into 2012 where we got a grant from the Department of Natural Resources to carry out a survey on what's happening with wood on the island. Who's buying it? Where's it coming from? Who's cutting the trees? Where are the trees? What kind of trees? Who? What are they making? Every single question like that. And we came to a very interesting time.
So, first of all, I want to know how many Puerto Ricans are during the week. They're raising Puerto Ricans? Perfect. Yes. Yeah, those who are living in Puerto Rico are Puerto Ricans. Those are. I want to tell you one thing. We are about 60% forest. And it just happened a hurricane to us. And we lost about 20 million trees. Is so, more or less the one million of trees that we have there. We lost them, they died or they were down. Now, I'm asking what they think about the Puerto Rican, because of you Puerto Ricans, how many people know what is the sawmill or that there is a sawmill in the island? You are architect, very good. You are architect, you are studying for architecture. And I want to see wood from Puerto Rico being in those structures that you are going to be designing. Why? Because we have the resources. Puerto Rico somehow, in the past, lost this connection to their natural resources. We disconnect from the sea, we disconnect from our mountains, and we disconnect from our trees, our forest. And it's this time, Maria, what is telling us is go and reconnect. If we're talking about restart here, because I see that it's in the back there, the restart, we need to restart in the right way. You know, let's put the hard drive, let's put the RAM that is new to install this new operating system. And this new operating system needs to have their natural resources as a value for the island. And that is very important. Now, What you have in the front that we brought to you is pieces of wood that are coming from our sawmill. This is mahogany. And what we are doing with the real mahogany, we are dumping it. We are throwing it into the trash and we are grinding it. This is what the people pay all around the world. Rolls-Royce used to build boats and cars with this wood. And what Puerto Ricans we are doing, we are throwing it into the trash. That's why we decide to bring this little baby that is called Puerto Rico hardwood. I don't want you to go and buy anything from us, go and buy from Bayanay or any other of the sawmills. We are just trying to make an institution here. It's more than buying pieces of wood from us or any of the wood workers that are in the island. We need to put our wood where it deserves to be. Architects all around Puerto Rico should be incorporating this material. We have it here. It's in the island. It's highly valuable and it's a very good material, rot resistant, and what else I can tell you. People all around the planet is looking for this wood. And it's time for us to use these resources. Now, so technically what I told you about there, about 20 million trees to 30 million trees that fell down, is a new challenge for Puerto Rican too, because we don't have the resources also to do it. We have to go from the very beginning, baby steps. Number one, where are these trees? They are in certain areas, they need to be developed in an entire way in how we're going to fix this, you know, to get this wood into lumber, to make it available. But then we have a forest. Now, we, Puerto Rican, we love our forest. You see, the Puerto Rican with a lot of appreciation for our forest, but we don't use it. And I think that that is something that also landscapers, especially landscape architecture, should start bringing into the thing, because the wood, the trees, we have it. But they get to a certain area, a certain moment that they either are going to fall or should we harvest them. So Maria showed us one more thing, that the trees are not forever. They fell down. And it's better to put them down in a smart way than let them fall, because we can predict that. Before we heard something that we need to predict the future, I think that was what Mr. Fuller in Jonathan's presentation, you know, that's what we need to do. We know that these trees are going to alter the power line. Now, how realistic is to go and put, and we are in the engineer part and architects and things like that, how realistic is going to do a subterranean, you know, under the soil line all around Puerto Rico? It's very difficult. But we can have, that is, what is possible is to have trees that can be trained, because we can train it, but how we are going to train it, we cannot even train the people. We don't have a school dedicated to this kind of thing. We don't have a school in forestry, we don't have a school in woodworking, we don't have a school in tree management, not even technical degree. If I'm here, it's because when I went to Las Casas de la Selva and learned these people of the Instituto Rico Technic was precisely telling me that. I didn't know what I was doing. I was trying to learn how to use my land, of my family land. And today we were able, I was able to not just understand what I should do with my land, but also what we can do as a country. And it's just to manage our resources. And Instituto Rico Technic has a very interesting way of doing it. It's an interesting approach of synergetic. So I think that we can apply that into every single part of our life, you know, how we live. It's interesting how when we use it. But for projects, it's amazing because all of these elements go together to create something. So it's time for us, Puerto Rican, in this restart, look at these things, synergetic management and all this to understand our resources. Also, appreciation is one thing that we also need to understand.
I think one point should be a little bit pointed out a little bit more. That is, the reforestation project started as a way to reclaim an ecology of land. No, I think people have to understand that, and then this is the last step of that. But it started as a way to,
yeah.
You know.
So the land at Las Casas de los Cabos, six parcels of land that had been abandoned, and most of everybody here knows that during the 40s and 50s, a lot of mountainous land in Puerto Rico was abandoned. A lot of this land was left, it was heavily grazed or agriculture that allowed a lot of erosion. Huge historical erosion issues on land. So all of these projects that we're talking about, the Institute of Ecotechnics that are dealing with land, are on land that was severely damaged, diseased by cattle or grazing or some kind of human activity caused it to become unviable. So the tree planting, well, what grows best on the land of Puerto Rico in the mountains? Trees.
Yeah.
Trees grow really well here, and it's amazing that in the last 20 years there haven't been more plantation, not a single species plantation or anything like that, but real movement forward, which happened in the 40s, 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s in forestry, and then over the 80s and 90s it kind of just disappeared and went into a kind of a lull. Timber trees that are valuable grow really well in Puerto Rico. And if that's one thing that can happen in Puerto Rico after the hurricane, is to reforest mountainous lands. And Frank Wadsworth, who is one of our greatest mentors, I'm sure many of you have heard of him here, has created a map of Puerto Rico where to plant timber trees that don't affect agricultural land, developers' land, etc., etc. So these are the things that we should be looking at in the future. And in Las Casas, we're going to be doing a whole lot of reforestation on landslides and places where trees have just been damaged and come down full scale.
Will you repeat the name of the author, please?
Frank Wadsworth. Frank Wadsworth is a forester. He started the Institute of International Institute of Tropical Forestry here in Puerto Rico. He's 102 years old right now and still on it.
One thing to follow this one is about these resources. Again, I want to point to the resources. Architecture has the amazing way to recreate spaces that we want to be in. You know, you are the beautifier, you know, that thing, the space creators. So, and a space can be a ship, and a space can be a room, whatever. But imagine an island that now we have the resources to make ships here. I would love to see ships coming from here, so hopefully at some point people from this school will come with some idea to create this wood, to build a wood boat in Puerto Rico that can handle more than 3 people at a time. Sailboats can be manufactured. We are a Caribbean island, so that could have, again, don't deny our conditions. We are a Caribbean island, so we should be fishing, we should be using our resources, and also, one more thing about resources, is for a long time I have been here in Puerto Rico, it's limited on resources. We have limited resources. Oh, Puerto Rico, we cannot grow so much because we are very tiny, and we don't have limited resources, so then we are limited, why we are throwing it away? So that is the main thing that we need to break as Puerto Ricans. So these spaces that you are going to be created, I want to see a little bit of more of that wood, please. That's all I can say right now.
I want you to say what, can I? Good. I never used the word resilience.
I can make a long lecture while I never use the skill. But this time I will use. You know why? Because what is the most resilient thing that you can think in the universe is not the tree. Is the tree the essence of the concept of resilience? It's really the tree. I don't like very much that abstract discussion about these odd words like today become resilience and in the past were others. But if you have to exemplify to anybody what is the concept of resilience, there is no better example of a tree. Because the tree is the quintessential force of nature that is able to resist to a great number of forces up to a certain level, of course, and then go back to the more or less the same system, up to a certain level. So I think that the fact to have the wood here is not only symbolic of a new restart from Puerto Rico because of the natural resources, because trees are using, are the best material in terms of creating a loop that is a kind of a positive loop, because in each aspect of his life is in a way active, as we know. It's active in the CO2, it's active in the soil, and even when you destroy, it's the minimum damage that it creates in the environment. So it's very simple. Why is one of the best possible material? Why all these places? It is simply built in the worst possible material, that is reinforced concrete, exactly for the same reason. Because the concrete is in each cycle of its process is a disaster. First of all, it's related to concrete, the fact of the quarries. Because you do concrete, taking out, eating mountains to take care of the quarries, first. Second, when you create the concrete, you have to burn in the alto forni. The alto forni, I don't know how they say that in English. You have to heal in the ovens, right? And the ovens create a huge CO2 things. And then in the process of construction and in the process of destruction, it's all a disaster. While you can think of wood, exactly the contrary, in each step, it is positive to the environment. So that is key to understand. The second thing that I think is key to understand is when Andreas was talking about the lack of school, the lack of thinking about it. Because of course, if you think of wood in very abstract terms, you say, oh, but wood is weak. How can you battle an hurricane with that material? Much better reinforced concrete, right? Or steel. This, first of all, goes against really the concept of resilience, first. And second, there are ways, there is technology, there is hibernation, there are ways that we are inventing, that have been already invented, and we've been inventing more and more and more to understand that. So this is highway. It's not something like that. It's a really a conceptual highway through which we have to restart. And I think the fact that you pick up the title was very illuminating for all of us.
I would like to ask something. It's more or less a basic question.
Because I was thinking about all the empty houses that people are like, people that are living toward the states and in the houses, and nobody cares about the houses, the houses of concrete. They are empty alone, probably. And I was thinking about planting trees in the patios of these houses, or maybe inside the houses, or planting trees in a way in which the tree itself can destroy the house, because we don't know how, what we are going to make it so much concrete now. It is easy to rethink about Detroit. Because in Detroit you can destroy a house in a very is awake. They are a house of wood, but not in Puerto Rico. And what we are going to do with all that houses that we have that there, can we use it? Can we use anger to reclaim those places that where we are by hungry?
I don't know, it's a great idea.
If you make places attractive, people will come and live in them. We have plenty of wood in Puerto Rico right now, on the ground. And we have been working since the hurricane to reclaim the wood, to rescue it, etc. There is a ton of wood out there. It needs to be managed. We are working with United States Army Corps and Forest Service right now to get the trees. There's other people also who are going to manage the trees. But it's a big deal to manage the trees. But we need people to use the wood. Otherwise, we're going to turn into piles of heated up wood and then it'll burn. So we need, imagine that you have lots of little cement houses that have wooden walls, that have wooden windows that are strong enough to withstand hurricanes. All these kinds of things can be engineered to be hurricane proof. We have a bunkhouse that had wooden shutters made from our wood. They survived an hurricane at the top of the mountain where some of the roofs went off. So all of these things are possible. Make places attractive. Don't plant huge trees next to houses because they will break up the houses and make them unsafe and make water come in. There are shrubberies that you can plant around houses, make them green, etc. Plant on roofs, those kinds of things. Keep big trees away from houses so that they don't cause so much damage in a hurricane. And you know, the result of unlimited planting of huge mahogany trees and lifted up paces and everything. It's great for us now because we actually have a lot of mahogany wood, but it means a lot of infrastructure has been destroyed. Trees falling, roofs breaking up pavements, roads, foundations of buildings, etc., etc. Now that we know what trees do, everybody knows now again. Don't plant trees so close to buildings.
Okay, not what?
Yes.
But I
saw your picture. So
now, think about Detroit. The people are destroying houses and planting trees and planting. Can I answer the question in Spanish? Maybe in Spanish.
En Spanish.
Okay, perfecto.
Aquí se piensa en Detroit. En Detroit ha sido muy fácil reutilizar buena parte de lo que es su suburbio, de su parte suburbana, porque son casas de madera, entonces la pueden eliminar fácilmente y replantar y desarrollar. Hay empresas, hay las bosques, Puerto Rico, el problema que vamos a tener si seguimos reduciendo nuestra población. Podríamos reducir a la gente otra vez más a la ciudad, que sería lo ideal, y reformar porque por eso porque puede empezar a crecer, no importa que esté bueno lo que pasa. Esa es la idea, que el árbol reclame ese espacio para el cual no hay capital para subir.
Let's say here another question, and then you answer to this question.
Okay, so there are certain species that we can use to do that. But the problem that we will have there is to not bring pests too. Like, for example, let's say that we create an urbanization here. I don't know the specific case, but let's go to Santurce. And let's say that in Santurce there is a line of abandoned houses in, in Puerta de Tierra or something like that, you know, in San Juan. If we bring this new wood here, you know, and start planting trees there, it will bring rats too, because it's part of it. So technically you will have to start separating what is that urban area of the new reforested land that we are going to develop. Probably we can do it in Caimito, or we can do it.
I was thinking, for example, about Villa Carolina.
Ugly
sprawl spaces.
But for example, there's no problem, and eventually it will happen. Anyway, like let's go to Chernobyl. You know, look, a good example is Chernobyl. Chernobyl was a complete disaster, and look how nature immediately came. So it will come, and I heard an ecologist one day told me, the good thing about concrete, that's not a good thing, is that you can break it, and once you break it, it will grow everything again. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the way to see it. Because concrete, what happens with the, when you're building with concrete, you are also have to have the land prepared. So to make all this urbanization, you have to go and put all these machines to put the place very firm, that nothing can root there. That's why we have in the city so much repair, because the trees were not able to root. So they were all superficial, a little wind, because they were going to fall. Imagine that during the few past rainstorm that happened in Puerto Rico, trees were falling down. Number one, mahogany is not necessarily the best tree to have in the city, you know, it's a forest tree. And number two, not having good soil to hold those roots make it very difficult. So let's say that a project like that can be done, and it eventually is going to happen no matter what. We just need to allow them to happen and not interfere with nature.
There is a question.
Okay,
What's the question? Yeah, over there, David.
David, I don't think you need
this. I don't know if it's a question. Just an impression. To anything. We all know that if we look at a Google map of Lake Cañon, which is shared between Haiti and the Dominican Republic and neighboring islands, we could see the border. We can see the border because on the Haitian side, they've lost all the vegetated area, which has complete land erosion, all the agricultural land is gone, all the topsoil and woods is gone, and it also increases, in that case, the vulnerability of lakes, because they're building on non-forest things. So there's obviously a relation between planted area, land stabilization, ecology, economy, whatever. So we're hearing that from this planet. Fine. And that's what I got out of it. And also economic crisis of the wood and all that. This morning, we heard the alcaldesa of Canova, whatever. Canova, okay? Which seems to be a very proactive lady, no? That cares, that moves politically. She occupies different political positions. She's pushing parties. She goes to schema. See, whatever. That looks like the other side of the world. My only reflection is this. We asked her a question if what had happened in her initiative, in her county, there was some influence between vegetated areas, you know, and what happened in relation to flooding, landfill, loss, or whatever. And practically her answer was, what I'm trying to say, there happens to be a lack of any type of coordination of policy in this island, and I'm sorry because I care very much for Puerto Rico, that allows the different strengths of you guys to come together in a policy. We heard the people of City Hall talking about the vacancies and whatever. This is a major problem. What do we do with 25% of vacancies? And then they go to the other side and say, well, but we have no way to do metropolitan territorial planning because we all do whatever we want into the business plan. So it's not a question. It is how the hell we use the workshop to create where is the Lucio, who's the king of this information and whatever. How do we use the workshop to be able to put in the table in a way that the people can be accessed information to understand that the more we interconnect the dots, we have a better place. I mean, that's
a very good point.
I'd like to, Jim, that's why you're here, add one thing to the discussion also, that it has to do with policy. Banks don't finance wooden structures anymore. They've stopped doing that for over a decade now, I think. I have a wooden house, and I think it's one of the last ones that was financed by the Bank of Iraq. And basically, I couldn't even finish my question of whether or not they financed it before they came up on me when I was buying the house. So there's a negative perception of wood. And if you go into the old newspapers around the 1950s, 60s, there were these surreal announcements of like Divine Concrete. There was actually a company here called Divine Concrete. So there's a whole marketing about concrete, and I think we all grab that perception that wood is safe, that wood is edible by termites. You know, there's been a whole condemnation of wood as a structural material. But you know, I think another thing that has to be layered onto this is structural wood, glue, lam, other types of processing the wood that actually guarantees that it's a stronger, more resistant and strong material. And another point I would add is to look at the history of furniture companies we had here, that we had some absolutely extraordinary furniture companies, and that was a wonderful time. You know, our deco pieces, it's just beautiful stuff. So there are other traditions here that might be able to be rescued.
Yes. So in terms of the wood, a structural wood, we need to look and start looking a little bit out of our coast. Let's say Japan, China, Vietnam, in Africa, in Europe, or let's just go even in Puerto Rico and let's go and see the houses that were built 300-400 years ago in Puerto Rico, that the wood is still there. So we did something good that we forget on the process. So we are not the only people that has hurricane in the planet. We just happen to have, technically we are probably one of the islands with less hurricanes. You know, one in a long time, you know, this category, you know, Florida, tell that to Florida, that they receive it every year, receive something. So, and they still constructing wood too. So it's not the, that it should be banned, the construction in wood. We should also look at our materials there. You know, we are buying all this scrap wood that is coming to us from distributor that costs 15 cents and they are making high profit. You know, we end up using cardboard for a structural thing. So of course that the bank is not going to do it. Also I want to point to the gentleman, to David, and thank you very much to bring this. And it's time for us, the Puerto Ricans. Let me tell you one of my frustrations in terms of policies in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, we haven't been able to make the national tree because political fight. We haven't been able to make the flower, national flower, because of political fight. We haven't even been able to choose the right color of our triangle. So we have now, on the flag, so our triangle flag has four colors now. One is black, one is dark blue. So, you know, we haven't even get together in our own flag. That doesn't happen in any place. So, of course, we are going to have problems making policies in the island. We are so divided and it starts to put together our thing.
Yeah, just to touch a little bit more on what Andres said. A lot of the pine that we get coming in, Home Depot and all these places, is not very good pine. Now, all over the country, we have Caribbean pine that has fallen down in hurricanes, didn't do terribly good on any of the ridges. It's really good pine, but nobody knows that because pine has a bad name because we get all this rubbish from elsewhere that's coming in, cheap building materials, and they are cheap because they break. This is what Spain was built from, Caribbean mahogany. Every single church in Spain is built from this wood. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my case.
I have a paper called the Other Things in the Art of Fire. I did it about 10 years, 8 years ago. But of these are in red mahogany and they are still bright orange after 90 years of use.
And nobody likes to eat it, nobody likes to, you know, it doesn't
No termites, no nothing.
This is another hardwood called Tamajo. This is another wood that's growing in Puerto Rico called Albite Costera. It treats like a weight tree. This is a thin tree in Indonesia, those things. This is an almond tree. Most of us don't know the almond terminalia catapa, which grows all over the avenues in Puerto Rico. A lot of them came down in Yabucoa, Humacao, Patias, our area where our project is. But we're finally getting to see this almond. These are all gray hardwoods. And there's a large slab of almonds on the ground there also. Puerto Rico grows really good hardwoods, and we should go forward into the future with the planting of the cactus. They grow really well on this island.
Okay, well, I hope to for your presence, your ideas, your vision for our island.